This is an audio archive edition of WINA's Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot, made available online by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network, cvillepodcast.com.
Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He joins us on Tuesday afternoons to talk about growth and development in Central Virginia. Good afternoon, sir. How are you?
Good afternoon, Coy.
How was your 4th of July weekend?
It was very good. We didn't go anywhere, really. We just hung out here at the house. Tried to catch up on lots of little house projects in the yard. I was climbing trees, cutting
were
branches.
You really? There you go.
Yeah, I pulled out all my old rock climbing equipment.
Doing a little Hank Hill on the weekend.
Scared my family, I think, because I was up, way up, too high in this tree. But then I had the family on the
you
other end
of
the
road. You gotta be careful with that, Brian.
Well, I was on a ladder, and I think I knew what I was doing.
I fell off a ladder once. See that right there? See that scar? All that? Fell down a tree.
Oh.
Yeah, I cut the limb off. And then I don't know what happened. It like flipped in the air or something and knocked the ladder off the tree. And so I tried to grab the tree to hold on so I wouldn't fall. And I just grabbed it all the way down.
Probably saved your life, though.
Yeah. I was about, 20, 30 feet in the air, but
that
scraped wasn't all the skin off my
arm. Not a chainsaw.
It was a chainsaw.
Oh.
The chainsaw went flying.
See, now
thank goodness it landed about 10 feet from me.
I've watched way too much of America's Funniest Home Videos to ever take a chainsaw up in a tree.
Yeah, thank goodness nobody was videotaping me.
I used one of those manual long pole saws.
That's the smart way.
But it was a thick branch and it took a long time.
Yeah, yeah. The smart, laborious way to get the job done. I was stupid and fast, but anyway. So you're up in the trees this weekend cutting stuff down. Yeah. What did y'all do for the 4th?
We watched our neighbor's fireworks.
Really?
Our neighbor, who I won't name, always has the good fireworks, if you know what I mean.
Ah.
Yes.
From like just going off the side of the road, pick something up, or just go down to South Carolina?
You know, I don't ask questions. We just set up our lawn chairs and enjoy the show.
You can get some cool stuff at the places around here, though.
Yeah, we bought a box of those, but you know, last year the neighbors were laughing at me when I was setting those off.
Oh.
Yeah, it just wasn't.
Brian, you got to come over here and see what real fireworks look like.
Exactly.
Take you down to south of the border.
So we had a good show.
Good, good. So let's talk about, speaking of a good show, tomorrow a good show in Albemarle County. This is a big deal.
Could be really interesting. The Albemarle County Board of Supervisors will be revisiting land use taxation. That's a topic we've talked a lot about over the past couple of years on this program. And this is it's a tax subsidy that if you own land that's in open space or forestry or agriculture, you get a reduced tax rate. Now, if you have a house on that property, the house and the land it's sitting on pays the full rate. But then all the acreage you have in one of those uses pays a lower tax rate. And it's about 60% of all of Albemarle County that is in land use. And that means the taxpayers are saving about $18.8 million in tax payments, real estate property taxes, that they're not having to pay.
And I guess one of the arguments against it that I'm hearing in a lot of emails is if you're in the growth area in Albemarle County and your land's not in land use, you're subsidizing the folks, you're subsidizing that tax break for the folks who are getting it.
That is an argument that's been made. And there are two concerns that have really come up. Is there abuse? Are there people getting land use that shouldn't be because they're not really using their property for that purpose? And one of the things the county will talk about tomorrow is something called revalidation. It's a check-in with the taxpayer. They're proposing it be done every 2 years to have them fill out a form that says, yes, I know I'm in land use and here's how I'm accomplishing that, and I'm still eligible. So that's a revalidation thing. I don't expect that to be very controversial, but it should get to it should provide some information to the county about how people are using their land and are they still doing it the way they originally said they did.
Never been done, right?
It's never been done. It's been talked about.
Checking up on people.
It's been talked about several times since 2001, but they've never implemented revalidation. Other localities nearby, Orange County, for example, does do it. And that'll be talked about tomorrow. I expect the board to support that because they unanimously ask staff to bring forward a program to do that.
Interesting. Could it be? It doesn't sound very controversial, though. It sounds like you're just asking people to fill out a form.
Yeah.
They're not going to send staff out to pay visits and check and make sure those cows you said you had.
You know, they're doing that anyway to do assessments of property values. Folks from the assessor's office are out in the field anyway. This would be another check, though, that requires the taxpayer to really put on a piece of paper how they're using it. And based on the feedback I've heard, if that form is simple, easy to understand, then I don't expect that to be very controversial.
Right.
The other question, though, and concern has been what's called the rollback tax. And right now, you were citing land in the growth area. So, for example, take a big development like Biscuit Run, which has benefited from land use taxation subsidies, and now we know it's going to be developed for new homes. And you have to pay back taxes once you start developing this. So you got the land use tax break, but now the current owner is going to have to pay the back taxes for 5 years. Some people have said that period should be longer, so there's a disincentive to then develop the property.
Yeah, because Biscuit Run was in land use for a lot longer than 5 years.
It was, and we'll only get 5 years worth plus the current year. And that's a limitation by the General Assembly. So right now, I think if the county wants to change that, they're going to have to focus on lobbying Richmond to get that change done. The other thing that will be talked about, though, is something known as Option 2. And this was a more in-depth and controversial look at changing which properties are eligible for land use. And it would eliminate, in effect, land use from the growth area. However, and I haven't gone into all the details. I've skimmed the staff report. Let's just jump to the bottom line here. I won't try to explain all the nuance of what the change was going to entail.
So revalidation is option one.
It's just another separate thing.
But there's something else on the books that they might vote on tomorrow called option two.
That's right. Several years ago, they were looking at multiple options about changing land use. This one just happened to be option two on that list.
Okay.
So it's not really significant.
So it's still known as option two.
Still known as option two. But forgetting the details of it, let me just tell you the bottom line. Staff are recommending heavily,
Brian?
Many, many pages worth of heavily against this. They're pointing out that it could result in decreased property values because they think an unintended consequence would be flooding of the market of new lots. People would want to avoid this program. And as a result, they would then try to subdivide and put new lots on the market. So there's concern about that. But, you know, bottom line for the county, staff estimate they would have to add 7 to 8 people for a year to help implement what's called option two.
You need more county staff.
You need county
to make
staff
it happen.
To implement and make this work. And then long term, you'd need to add one full-time person.
What is option two?
Administering this. Well, it would limit the property to those parcels that are in what's called the open space designation. And various things could qualify for that. But by limiting it to that designation, it would, in effect, eliminate parcels in the growth area. So if you took away that effort in that current situation in the growth area, you might then – people may decide, well, I can't afford to hold on to this land if it's not getting land use, and then they would try to develop it more quickly. The bottom line for staff was they didn't see any benefit in reducing development in the rural areas to doing this option two. They said, let's start with revalidation, see what happens. But in making any more substantial changes, they thought the negatives outweighed the pros on this. And
so not likely that they'll support that.
I don't think so. I think it's very unlikely. And one of the reasons is two supervisors voted against looking at this. That would be Ken Boyd and Lindsay Doyer. And then Ann Malik, who supported taking a look at it, did so with reservations. She indicated in May her preference to looking first at validation and seeing what happens. We'll see what happens. I expect a lot of members of the public to be there to provide some input. But the work session is tomorrow night at 6 p.m.
So this isn't a public hearing on land use?
They will be taking public feedback, yes. I do expect that.
So there will be public there to speak about some of these land use issues in Albemarle County.
Yep.
And that's at the county office building?
County office building, 6 o'clock tomorrow night.
You know what? I've always found it interesting. Somebody called in one time with some of the facts of land use. I've always found it interesting that, 60 or 70% of the acreage in Albemarle County that's currently getting this tax break that's in land use is not cows, it's not tomatoes, it's not hay, it's just woods. I didn't know you own woods. You can get a tax break for owning woods.
Yep.
That's a pretty sweet deal.
You're supposed to have a forestry plan to go along with that, though.
So I wonder if the revalidation might say not only that you have woods, but that you have a forestry plan implemented.
Right, that's
implemented,
my understanding. Yep.
Which is different from just owning woods.
Yes.
You're culling the big trees,
and you're getting,
as it were.
Yep, and that's a little bit more detail than I'm really knowledgeable about. What's also
important, my understanding. What's also important too is this land use thing is different from county to county. There's no real state. It doesn't come from Richmond saying exactly how you have to do your land use. Because I know when you go over to Augusta County, for example, the land use over there is a lot harder to get into. I mean, you got to have some cows. I mean, that's how they work it over there. I mean, it's not pretend country. You're not a gentleman farmer over there. You are a farmer. You got to have some pigs. You got to have some cows. You're not just some woods, and you're not just haying. That's not good enough.
Well, and not all the supervisors are convinced there's really abuse going on. And I think that's something that they hope to get more information about by doing this revalidation. Members of the public have been concerned that it is getting abused. But a lot of that sentiment, I think, comes from the fact of seeing large parcels in the growth area, which the county says, you know, we intend at some point to put development there. They don't like seeing those pieces of property get that benefit when they know in the end it's going to be developed and the developer will get the upside of that transaction.
Yeah. I mean, Hollymead Town Center, wasn't that in land use at one point?
I assume it was. I don't know for a fact.
But, yeah.
You know, there are other places like I spoke with Supervisor Sally Thomas not recently about this, but a while back. She said Blandemar Farm, which is a place I used to live during college before it was developed, but it was a big 1,400-acre farm south of town off of between 29 and Route 708. And Blandemar Farm was ultimately developed, but it's got, you know, big houses on big lots. But those 20-acre home sites in Blandemar Farm are eligible for land use. Now, not the house itself and the property it's sitting on, but if they're cutting the hay on those big house estate properties, they're getting land use taxation.
Right.
So that, you know, some people look at that and say, shouldn't a house like that be paying
rich people getting a tax cut? That's full, what people say.
Full rate, because they're not going to be able to subdivide that property.
Yeah.
Further, it's got its one house.
Just a
on
big
it.
Yard.
It's a big yard being cut for hay, and it's getting a land use tax break.
Yeah. It's a really controversial thing, and I can honestly, you know, I live in the growth area. I can see the points on both sides, because there's a lot of people out there who say, look, my family's out of business if we don't get this tax cut, because we're literally farming. Then you have a lot of people who they just have their grass hayed. They're not really farming, you know, but they're, you know, wealthy folks having a farmer come in and hay their land, and they're getting a tax cut for that.
And the intent of the land use taxation program is to keep that land, you know, in the business of agriculture and keeping it, you know, bucolic in the countryside. Lots of folks in Charlottesville like to look at, but it's the farmers who are living on that land trying to make a business out of it.
Yeah.
And they have said publicly at these meetings that they couldn't do it without land use.
Yeah. And there's got to be a way, I guess, to figure out how do we keep this program to benefit those people, but not have people taking advantage of it. And, you know, let's be honest, really what we're talking about are developers who buy all this big land and say it's in land use when they're just sort of waiting until the market's available that they can build a shopping center there or a neighborhood.
Well, they are playing by the rules, and those rules are applied equally right now in the growth area versus the rural area. That does rub people the wrong way, but that's the rules of the game from Richmond.
That's the rules, as my son says. We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. He joins us every Tuesday afternoon to update us about growth and development issues here in Central Virginia. Where should we start? What happened last week?
So we were talking, well, no.
Okay.
Let's start with St. Anne's Belfield.
All right.
Since
St. Anne's Belfield. They got an upper school, they got a lower school. They got an upper campus, but you know one thing they don't have? They don't have a middle campus. I guess that would
they
be,
have a middle school.
That would be Taiwan Garden.
Yeah. Well, you know, if they grow, maybe they'll need a middle campus. But at this point, they're saying, interestingly, that they're not growing. They're just relocating students.
They must have a lot of land over there at the lower school.
Well, it's interesting. If you're familiar with the lower campus, which is off Faulkner Drive, which is right off that exit from the 29 bypass heading to Bel Air Market, the Exxon station right there. So you come off the bypass if you're heading south on 29. You exit off at Ivy there. And before you get to the railroad tracks and Bel Air Market, there's a little right turn with a little sign that says St. Anne's Belfield. And St. Anne's is up that road.
Yeah. And you can see the playing fields from the bypass.
That's right. Now, that big playing field that you see will be gone. Because they will put new academic buildings on that field.
Didn't they just redo that field? They did.
One of the fields is new and will be maintained. I think
that,
the
lacrosse field.
I think the football field with the turf field will stay.
Yeah.
But then there are two other fields right there. The one further away from the bypass will go away because they'll put school buildings there.
Yeah, because the one that's right near the bypass, I think they just redid
that. I think that's going to become parking. Don't hold me to that.
Uh-huh.
I think that's going to become something else. But they are going to relocate a major athletic field up behind the lower campus.
And that whole area over there, they refer to as lower campus.
Yeah.
And right now it houses preschool and elementary.
That's right.
Right. And then back over there, across from University Shopping Center, you know, across from Foods of All Nations, that's their upper campus.
Yep.
And it right now houses middle school and high school.
That's right.
And what they want to do is they want to take the middle school out of the upper campus.
Yep.
And move it over there to the lower campus.
You got it.
All right.
So the lower campus would go from about 300 students today to 550 when they relocate the middle school.
So it'll almost double.
Yeah.
Can you say cars?
Cars. Well, that's...
and traffic?
And traffic, of course.
On tiny little country road?
That's one of the issues to be talked about. This will be in front of the Albemarle County Planning Commission tonight, starting at 6 o'clock. So in 20 minutes, this is one of their agenda items. We'll be covering this. And interestingly, the staff report, the whole reason this is in front of the county is because, guess what? You need a special use permit to do a school like this in that location. So because they have a special use permit today that allows them basically up to 300 students, if they want to have more students, they need a new special use permit. So that's the whole reason the county is able to ask questions and get involved in this. Interestingly, when this was talked about in a work session a while back, Coy, there's a big open area, a big farm that's owned by UVA, right there at Faulkner Drive. There's a big white house up on the hill.
Yep, it's beautiful.
I don't know the history of that.
That was the Faulkner family.
Oh, I assume so.
Yeah. Hunter Faulkner, of course, passed away about 10 years ago, and it was his dad's place, and that's where he grew up. And, of course, he was a university student. He was a 7, and they had a big construction company and built stuff.
Excellent.
Faulkner Construction.
Well, one of the ideas that was thrown out by a planning commissioner was, why don't you take the entrance to St. Anne's and relocate it through, you know, part of the farm there, so that you can connect it back over to the road that I call 27 curves or 25 curves, whatever that is.
Yeah, 29 curves.
29.
Isn't it 29?
Is it up to 29 now? That road that goes behind farm.
It's Farmington. Old Ivy Road.
Old Ivy Road.
Yeah. If you're on the Miller Center and you pass Old Ivy Road and you go down to that stop sign, instead of going left underneath the railroad trestle to Bel Air Market, you go straight.
Because it's quite
21 curves.
I'm not going to 21. That's right.
Yeah.
I'm not going to be able to describe the path you take to get to St. Anne's, but it's kind of circuitous.
Yeah,
If you're coming from 250, for example, and you come in under the railroad trestle, and you can't go straight up to Faulkner Drive. You've got to go around that little business complex.
You go right, left, and then stop sign, and then cross as road as people are, you know, shooting off of the bypass.
So there's some concern that little choke point there at Faulkner Drive and the ramp is going to get, you know, kind of complicated.
It's going to be crazy. I think that's a genuine concern, and it's not like a kind of place where you can put in a stoplight or even a roundabout because traffic will really start backing up on the bypass.
So one planning commissioner said, why don't you move that entrance and have it be, you know, cut through the farm, move it somewhere else so you can eliminate that little stop. Apparently, UVA is not entertaining that notion. So that said, VDOT and the Planning Commission will look at some other options, one of which is to build a turn lane, ask St. Anne's to build a turn lane off of that ramp on the bypass. So widening the ramp, creating a turn lane into Faulkner Drive to eliminate, you know, to sort of create two travel lanes there to eliminate some of that congestion.
So you'd widen the bypass coming off the bypass south.
Widen that ramp.
But then how would you get to it if you're down on 250 already?
Well,
like if you're down at Bel Air Market, how do you get up to the school?
Yeah, you'd still have to.
You still have to go around your elbow to get to your thumb.
But, you know, as I-64 recently has had some construction westbound, I've noticed that a lot of people are taking 250. Now, the construction's over now and school's out. But, you know, a month ago when I would finish your show, I immediately get on the bypass to go home back to Ivy.
Yeah.
And I would come approach St. Anne's on the right, and I would see cars, you know, at 6 o'clock backed up onto the median on the side of the road there. They would pull over onto the median, not the median, the shoulder, excuse me.
On the bypass.
Yeah, on the they
trying
would get on
get,
the shoulder
trying
of the
to
bypass
get off.
Because the cars were backed up,
yeah.
And they were afraid of getting rear-ended.
Yeah.
Out on the
it could be really
bypass.
Dangerous. This is going to be a tough nut to crack, actually. Isn't there another way you could get them in? Like, does it have to be through that existing driveway? Like, think outside the box here. Can you, like, come in from a totally different direction back in the woods there? Like, back off of, you know, whether it's hydraulic or somewhere up there off of 29?
Well, Coy, that road project is known as the Western Bypass. And it did go back through those woods somewhere back there.
Yeah, that's what I thought, But now they want to use that for they want to use that right away now for a pipeline from the South Fork to so we can make this new reservoir.
Yeah, I don't know that they're looking at any out-of-the-box scenarios like that.
Yeah.
But certainly, if anyone in the public has ideas along those lines...
They may have to. When is this meeting? Tomorrow
this
night?
Tonight. Tonight at 6 o'clock.
Interesting.
But I expect they'll work something out. We'll have a full report on our blog tomorrow, seavilletomorrow.org.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler of Charlottesville tomorrow. He joins us on Tuesday afternoons. A quick break. We'll be right back.
You're listening to the podcast of Charlottesville Right Now with Poi Barefoot. Podcasting of the show is made available by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network.
We're talking with Brian Wheeler, the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. It's online at seavilletomorrow.org. You can get all the details on these and other news stories right there on the website, including video and podcasts and all sorts of cool stuff, maps, pictures. It's all right there. Let's talk about these water lines and this new sewer station.
So the Albemarle County Board of Supervisors got an update from its water experts last week. And this is Gary Fern, who runs the Albemarle County Service Authority. If you're in the county and you get public water or sewer, you pay your bill to the Albemarle County Service Authority. So that's the utility in the county. In the city, you pay City of Charlottesville.
Right.
So it's all part of the city. Anyway, in the county, Gary Fern runs that. And then Tom Frederick, of course, runs the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority, which is the...
Where the authority buys its water.
That's right.
And turns around and sells it to us.
You got it. So anyway, in this update, it was quite interesting. We learned that the Albemarle County Service Authority is working on, quote, one of the largest projects the ACSA has ever undertaken. Can you guess what that is?
Something to do with flushing the toilet.
It does.
Because we need more toilets.
It's called the, it will be called the North Fork Pump Station. And this is related to all things National Ground Intelligence Center, Wendell Wood, Camelot, the Camelot Wastewater Treatment Plant. And we've talked about these things in the past. We've talked about the North Point development being held up because it, for one reason, it didn't have sewer capacity in a certain area.
All this development going on.
All this northern
up there
development,
north of 29 north. They don't have enough...
Don't have enough sewer
toilet
capacity.
Capacity.
And so as the Ground Intelligence Center is expanding, becoming the Ravana Station military base, you know, we're relocating 1,000 jobs to that military base. As North Point, which has been approved, as that starts to get built, we have a need up there apparently for
there'll be a lot
more
of toilet
capacity.
Yeah.
Again, it all gets pumped into the city of Charlottesville to the Moores Creek Water Treatment Facility.
Yeah. So are they going to build
treatment.
A new... wastewater treatment facility or
they're
just
build
a new
pump station.
So they're just going to build a new pump station to send all that stuff down to Charlottesville.
That's right, because the existing Camelot wastewater treatment plant needs to be retired. Now they're going to invest another $400,000 or so in that facility to keep it going. But in the meantime, they're meeting with UVA because UVA is right across the street from NGIC at the North Fork Research Park.
Right.
So you've got UVA, you've got Wendell Wood and everything around NGIC, you've got the North Point development. The ACSA is meeting with all those parties to figure out how to pay for this. They need to figure out the engineering. They need to figure out the cost and then who's going to pay for it.
How much does it cost?
Well, they're not saying yet.
And that means it's a lot.
And Gary Fern was asked that question directly. And one of the supervisors, I think Dennis Rooker, said, I heard it was $30 million or something. And Mr. Fern wouldn't comment on that number. I think he really wants to get the engineering done first.
Yeah.
And so they're going to do that between now and September. In September, after that point, we expect a cost estimate to be made and then some arrangements to be made with these developers who all have an interest in having enough capacity there to allow for their projects to stay.
They're
going
to have to pitch in or they can't build their neighborhoods. Right. Is that basically what we're talking about?
That's right.
Yeah. Is there enough capacity in Charlottesville to handle that if we started pumping all that stuff down here?
Well,
because right now we're not, right? Right now they're cleaning it up there.
I think it depends at what point the build out actually happens. I think if you built out everything, you know, in the Places 29 North Corridor, no, you know, there isn't enough capacity at the Morris Creek facility. But that's another project that the RWSA is going to be working on, upgrading that facility. And as Crozet grows, the Crozet sewage, as you know, gets pumped in there as well. And so that's a whole another capital project.
So they're going to might need a new pump station in Crozet as well.
Well, I don't know at what point that pump station needs work, but let's talk about water pipelines, because this was also quite interesting. There's been a lot of talk about Route 29 and the safety around Forest Lakes because of the fatal accident that happened up there. And as you know, there was a town hall meeting last week talking about road safety and different improvements.
Yeah, they never should have put that entrance there in the first place.
One of the long-term plans for VDOT has been to continue the four-lane stretch, you know, between Hollymead Town Center and the Sam's Club, the Walmart, because right now it constricts back down to two lanes in front of the Hollymead community.
Right, right.
And one of the things that VDOT has asked the Ravana Water and Sewer Authority to do, I assume sort of in preparation for this, if they ever get the money to do it, but asking RWSA to move the water pipe that's underneath 29. There's a water supply pipe from the North Fork Water Treatment Plant. So if you're up in those northern communities, you actually get your water from a treatment plant up in that neck of the woods. So this is interesting. If some catastrophic accident happened at that North Fork plant, there would be no public water for places like Forest Lakes and Hollymead and Camelot.
Interesting.
And one of the ideas that RWSA has long had is to connect the two water systems so they get some redundancy and fault tolerance. And by that, they'd have to build a new pipeline to connect the two water systems. Now, this is not the pipeline that's being talked about with the water supply connecting the two reservoirs. This is a pipeline just to deliver the end product.
Out of a reservoir.
Yeah, after it's been treated.
Yeah.
So to deliver the finished product.
So it would come out of Ragged Mountain, basically, and go all the way up to Forest Lakes?
No, I'm not sure.
Yeah.
To be honest. I believe it would connect out of the South Fork water treatment plant. So I don't think it would go that far.
Okay.
But basically, they're just trying to connect the grid here to make sure that they have redundant sources of treated water.
Who pays for that?
Well, the ratepayers are going to pay for that. But here's what's interesting, Corey. And this is where the pipeline intersects with transportation ideas. So RWSA is faced with this idea that, hey, we got to move that pipe. We either have to move it to the side of the road and away from the power lines and whatever other right-of-ways are there and tear up a whole lot of trees and a whole lot of property to move the pipe out of the road, or because there's an existing pipe there.
Underneath the road
Underneath the road.
Okay. And if they want to expand and four-lane the road, they have to move the water
line. They're probably going to have to move that anyway.
Okay.
So, we've talked on this program about Berkmar Drive. Berkmar Drive, of course, you know, comes out of 29 across from Fashion Square Mall, and then it goes around
all the way up
parallel
to Sam's Club.
To 29 up to the Sam's Club.
Yeah.
And
I like Berkmar.
It's a view of the county that Berkmar Drive should continue up to Hollymead Town Center.
Yep.
But you got to cross
the river. Yeah.
So David Slutsky has been one of the supervisors really trying to make work with developers in the community to get funding for a bridge across the river. So David's been working on that.
Didn't Wendelwood offer that?
He has offered that at different times in the past.
Yeah.
Because he's got other land on that side of the road that he would like to develop at some point.
Yeah.
So there is the potential for a proffer there from a developer.
But there's going to have to be a scratching of the back to get the bridge.
But here's the thing. So apparently you can't just hang a pipe on an existing bridge. So let's say you wanted to move the pipe and then hang it on the current bridge on 29 over the Ravana River. Well, Tom Frederick said, you know, VDOT doesn't like doing that because the bridge wasn't designed to hold that load.
Of the water running through the pipe.
And
this is water that's going to somebody's home.
Yeah.
To drink and shower. Right. Okay.
So instead, what Tom Frederick said is maybe we ought to look for an opportunity, and actually David Slutsky might have been the one who suggested this, but look for opportunities with Berkmar Drive. If that's ever extended or they can establish the right-of-way, the path for it, put the pipe there and then design that bridge from the beginning.
To hold a water line.
To hold the water line.
Yeah.
So I thought that was sort of...
Well, you see bridges all over America that have water lines running through them.
Yeah, and I don't know if they're all...
Under them and beside them.
Maybe they all think ahead of time and figured those things out. But anyway, I thought this was an interesting long-term proposal to both take care of a water line need, a road need, and think about our infrastructure.
That would be very, very cool to be able to get on Berkmar Drive and go all the way up to Hallamy Town Center without ever getting on 29.
Yeah.
I mean, it would be really cool.
Well, VDOT has said that one of the obstacles to designing this bridge and getting the Berkmar Drive thing moving on the engineering side is that, of course, money. So one of the things Frederick might be able to do on behalf of the Ravenna Water and Sewer Authority is help fund some of that engineering because it's going to have to be done. He's going to have to do some engineering anyway to figure out where to put his pipe.
Yeah,
and
then
might be able to work together and share some of the cost. So we'll keep an eye on that.
Cool. It would be more likely than that it would happen if you bring somebody else in on it who has a vested interest in seeing a bridge there, because you can put a water line there.
Yeah. So those are the kinds of exciting things we look for in our public meetings.
The only constant is change, Brian. It's always changing. So what else if we go on? We got a couple of minutes.
Well, we've got city council last night. I was at that meeting, and city government has decided to conduct a performance and efficiency review.
See what you started?
Of government operations. And Albemarle County, of course, decided to do this last week. The city school board has already decided to do this. So they will become the fourth public body.
And the county school board, which you're in, when you wear another hat, you serve as chairman, y'all have already done one.
That was done last year. And so that sort of set the ball rolling on this.
Yeah.
But it's interesting. A couple of the city councilors were somewhat skeptical of doing this. They were skeptical about the qualifications of the Weldon Cooper Center at the University of Virginia, not to knock, you know, what they do. But in the words of Dave Brown, one of the city councilors, he said he wasn't sure he wanted, retired city officials to be working on an assessment of how the city of Charlottesville is doing. He wanted some fresh ideas on the table. What are some best practices? And he expressed some concern about that. I don't know if that's valid or not. But that was the concern he shared. And then the other thing they talked about was wanting to have an apples-to-apples comparison with other localities. So one of the things that happens in these efficiency studies is you're sort of benchmarked against other cities of a similar size. And Mayor Brown – or he's not mayor anymore – Dave Brown said that one of the things he wanted to do is make sure that as they looked at other cities, that the ones that were selected – had similar aspirations and goals.
Apples to apples. Yeah. And, not just same population.
Right.
Interesting.
And so they agreed to do it. They're going to allocate up to $50,000. They'll spend about 4 months between September and February of next year, and city council will get the report. But
there you go.
All our local governments are looking at how to be more efficient and effective.
This is a good thing. Brian Wheeler is the executive director of Charlottesville Tomorrow. Thank you, Brian.
Thank you, Coy.
Online at SeavilleTomorrow.org. Y'all have a great night. Enjoy yourselves.
You've been listening to Charlottesville Right Now with Coy Barefoot. Charlottesville Right Now is broadcast live Monday through Friday on News Radio 1070 WINA from 4 to 6 p.m. Best-selling author and historian Coy Barefoot is the host and producer. To interact with Coy and his guests, you can call 434-977-1070. Coy can be reached at barefoot@wina.com. This audio download has been made possible by the Charlottesville Podcasting Network. Visit SeavillePodcast.com for more.